Just before we start the show, a quick message to say that I need your help. Whether you're a long-term listener or you literally just found us, I would be incredibly grateful if you could go to mattalder.com and fill out a very short survey about this podcast. It won't take longer than 2 minutes of your time and will be incredibly helpful to me as I develop Recruiting Future into 2023. Just to recap, the website address is mattalder.com and it will take just 2 minutes of your time to complete the survey. Go on, press pause and do it right now.
There's been more of scientific discovery, more of technical advancement and material progress in your lifetime and mine than in all the ages of history.
Hi there, this is Matt Alder. Welcome to episode 471 of the Recruiting Future podcast. A volatile talent acquisition market and the immense disruption we're seeing to traditional ways of working are driving significant changes in employer branding strategies. Culture, EVP, and employer brand marketing are going through a period of intense evolution. And it's essential to understand what's happening in this space. My guest this week is Charu Malhotra, Global Head of Talent Branding and Recruitment Marketing at PA Consulting. In our wide-ranging conversation recorded at Unleash World in Paris, we discuss some of the current issues in employer branding, culture, and retention. So, hi Charu, and welcome back to the podcast.
Hello, Matt.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. We're recording this live on the second day of the Unleash event in Paris. How's the event going for you?
Well, first of all, thanks again for having me on this podcast. It's my favourite recruitment podcast, so pleasure to be here. Day two, buzzy, interesting, good conversations. And like I'm sure you've heard 100 times already, just so brilliant to be out, you know, at a conference and see people in real life versus just via a Teams or Zoom window.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's day two. I'm rather regretting the amount of red wine that I drank last night. But hey, we're in Paris.
Exactly. So that's,
you have to do that. It's the law. We did a panel together yesterday all about the challenges in talent acquisition and the things that are going on in the market. And it was a great conversation, but we were very limited in terms of time and couldn't maybe get into the topic as much as we wanted to. So I really want to kind of pick up that conversation with you now. So first of all, I suppose tell everyone what you do, because we haven't actually introduced you properly. So tell everyone what you do, and also, you know, what are the challenges that you're seeing in talent acquisition at the moment?
Sure. So I'm Charu Malhotra. I've been lucky enough to have worked at organizations like Unilever, McKinsey, BP in recruitment marketing and talent acquisition transformation roles. I'm heading up talent branding or employer branding globally at PA Consulting, which is a sort of a medium-sized consulting house, international and based out in London.
Fantastic stuff. And talk us through the sort of challenges that you're seeing in the market.
Yeah, I mean, from a talent acquisition stroke culture branding perspective, which is the sort of the balance I have in my role and as someone with my skill set, I think there's so many different challenges, but I think we are not escaping the fact that the pandemic, although we're seeing it very much in the rear view window, has had a massive impact on how candidates and employees feel about work. And that's had an impact across talent acquisition naturally and retention in terms of internally. So I think that's a challenge, a really interesting challenge, and a challenge that a lot of companies have been grasping with and doing really some brilliant things. And yet other organizations are perhaps going back to the de facto, okay, pandemic is over. And I think there's that one challenge. Then clearly we can't escape the fact there's a huge macroeconomic impact, cost of living, inflation, and of course, impact on the war. From a war perspective. So there's so many things going on that are outside of our control that are impacting the TA team's functions and ability to sort of do what they want to do.
One of the things that we were talking about yesterday was how organisations can build inclusive workplaces, particularly when workforces are becoming more and more remote. I mean, what are your thoughts around that?
Yes, and I'm so glad you asked this question because we skimmed the surface yesterday. So when inclusive workforces and the whole aspect of inclusion, diversity and equity is something I've been working on for the last 5-6 years. It's a passion of mine, both personally and professionally. And I think what we're seeing is organizations grapple with this whole, how do we maintain the balance that employees have said, and I'm talking about knowledge workers now, what they don't want to come back to the office full time. They want to be in a situation where they've got freedom to flex how they organize their work lives with a line manager community that doesn't actually necessarily know or has been trained up to manage remotely, to reward remotely. And you still have massive pockets of the proximity bias. So I think, you know, creating an inclusive culture is clearly, we've all got, it's not about ping pong tables and bars and pizza at Fridays. Those days have gone. But I think it's also gone past the patience of, okay, Mr. Hiring Manager, you don't need to see me come into the office 2 days a week just because you come in. There was a brilliant piece of research that Slack shared on Monday, and I was reading to a podcast by Bruce Daly from ex-Twitter, talking about something like 58% of knowledge workers are coming into the office, back into the office, to spend between 2 and 3 hours in the office on Zoom or team calls with colleagues who are working from home. I mean, that's a colossal waste of energy, time, and it's going to lead to frustration. So I'm meandering and didn't really answer the question, how are organizations creating inclusive cultures? I think we also need to think more about, have we trained up managers? I don't think we have, to how do you manage and reward? And the reward thing's really important. Remote workers and hybrid working is really important, that you don't end up with a proximity bias. And I think a lot of companies are still in that space.
And how is it in your organization in terms of how you kind of manage remote work, or is it hybrid working? How does it work?
Yeah, I think it's classic sort of hybrid working. The pandemic forced our organization to allow individuals to work from home. Individuals perhaps hadn't had that liberty before. They were normally client facing because it's a management consulting, or work client side. So it's very much hybrid working. That flexibility is there. I think, like a lot of organizations, it's grappling with the, how do you maintain or create a culture? And the business I work for is very acquisitive, so it's done a number of acquisitions in the last 12 months. How do you create a culture? How do you flex that culture when you've got new acquisitions and you've got, you know, nearly 40% of the workforce during the pandemic, so haven't necessarily been to the office in those first 0 to 6 months, which are pivotal, really key and instrumental to the buy-in a candidate stroke employee has to the company's values and ways of working.
There's been a lot of content at this show about culture and inclusion and engagement. Is there any sort of presentation that you've seen, or any anything that you felt kind of sort of really nails that?
Yes, so absolutely. I think, you know, one in six of the stands here are a form of a platform, a piece of software that talks about rewarding or IND, which is, it's really lovely to see. And I'd love to see some kind of comparison about what was that like 3 years ago when we were last out here. I would say that the biggest impactful presentation I had is, I was lucky enough to see Erin Mayer talk this morning. As a word nerd, a bookworm, you know, I was delighted to see her. You know, it made my heart very happy. And she talked at length about the Netflix culture, but with some really interesting and provocative points around, when you do build in a company where you have no rules, how do you maintain that as the company grows and flexes? But in particular, she talked really smartly around the values that companies have, and how do you embed that in a really, really high-performing culture? How do you embed that? How do you make sure that everyone's talking with that same handbook? And Netflix obviously have done it really well, famously well, but how do you take that away in a, you know, gigantic organization? So for me, Erin Mayer was brilliant. I've read her book, heard her talk. She talked a lot about how contagious performance is, but also this dichotomy of, you know, how do you build a performance-led culture? It's easier in a startup to do that. You're starting from scratch in many cases. What do you do in a company that's 70 years old or 100 years old? How do you then rebuild that culture for that focus? So that was, for me, the standout.
A quick message from our sponsor, Wonolo. Hi everyone, I want to tell you about Wonolo. That's W-O-N-O-L-O. Wonolo stands for Work Now Locally. Wonolo enables businesses to find quality workers for on-demand, seasonal, short-term and long-term work. Ditch the bulky paperwork and interview process and use Wonolo to find quality workers fast and get work done even faster. With flexible workers and no platform fees, you can save on operating costs, meet demand and maximise earnings with ease. Wonolo is available in over 100 markets, including Chicago, Dallas, Atlanta, New York and Seattle. Get workers who are ready to work and spend less time finding them with Wonolo. Go to www.wonolo.com/pod. That's www.wonolo.com/pod and take the stress out of finding workers. Obviously, being at a conference in France with attendees from all over Europe and in some places coming from further afield all over the world, it kind of really brings, I suppose it brings home, there's a lot of commonality because we're all walking around looking at the same software and, having conversations, going to the same sessions. For someone in a global role, how does employer branding work across countries? What's the level of commonality, particularly at the moment, I think, with all the economic problems and the different attitudes to work and the different regulations? How does employer branding work at the moment internationally?
Yeah, employer branding, I've always worked globally. I would say PA is more international than global. It's a much smaller business. But I think there's a real element of thinking about the segmentation a lot more seriously, with a lot more focus when it comes to what's going to draw a candidate through the being aware of an organization, that constant heartbeat of content that we always talk about, or I always talk about, to actually thinking, okay, I'm going to go and apply for a job with this business, or I'm going to follow them and understand a bit more about them before applying. So I think the segmentation has become more and more important. It's not just a nice to have, it's imperative. I think recognizing, and anyone that's worked in employer branding has talked about borderless talent. It's truer than ever. When you're competing against talent, especially in the tech space, with companies that are saying you can be based wherever you want to be based, it becomes really hard to draw out that your job adverts don't say remote working or remote working, but you have to come in one day a week. That's not remote working. So I think to your point, how does employer branding work in this world? It's that segmentation. By that, what I mean is thinking about your audience, thinking about geographies, territories, a lot more when it comes to content. But I think we're much more open now to think about employer branding with a longer lens versus just thinking about it, recruitment marketing. Companies and CEOs are much more interested in culture because candidates aren't the only ones walking away. Employees are going, actually, do you know what? I can go elsewhere. I'm not as bought in because I've been with this business 2 years, but I actually only have gone into the office a handful of times. So I will leave much more readily.
There are alleged technology solutions for every single kind of talent problem that we could have. Cutting through the noise, what technologies do you think are most useful at the moment?
Two elements, two red threads. So I'm a massive believer, and I've said this yesterday, and I've said it from the minute I walked into our industry, is there is no better indicator to a company's culture for a candidate than the recruitment process. From how you communicate your job adverts to the type of comms that come out from your ATS, the difference between dear applicant to dear Matthew, dear Charu, to the hiring managers turning up on time, to the hiring managers committing to a timeline. So I think there's two big elements that, A, it's the taking away the administrative burden, those repetitive tasks, whether it's interview scheduling, which I think take up so much time but are so critical. It's the engine room of everything we do within the recruitment function. So that repetitive task, which can take so much time, using technology to take that away from the recruiters or the administrative function, and having a much more frictionless hiring manager experience for that, and becomes then a great experience for the candidate. And then secondly, around assessment, we can't talk about D&I being important if we have assessing of candidates still with inbred bias. So for me, assessment is the area that you look at technology. I'm not saying technology is a silver bullet, absolutely not. You have to buy your technology with a massive amount of due diligence and do a lot of investigation. But for me, when a company doesn't use any kind of assessment at the front end or the middle end, I worry. So those are the two elements, I think. And of course, programmatic media from a employer branding perspective, which is of course my area. But for me, assessment is the area that you should look at from a tech perspective.
Final question: where do you think we're heading, or maybe where do you hope we're heading? So what do you hope is going to happen in talent acquisition and employer branding over the next sort of 2 to 3 years?
From a talent acquisition perspective, I hope we are heading, and again, some organizations are heading this way, where internal mobility is given as much priority and focus as external attraction. So by that I mean, why are employees walking away? It's because it's easier to get a job externally than it is to move internally. Why is that? So I think that's where I want the TA functions to head, using the same techniques and tools that we've honed externally, internally. And by that, I mean marketing our jobs internally. I've talked about this a lot internally where I am. A lot of jobs just simply aren't understood. So how are you going to apply for it? And the other element, I think, where do I want employer branding headed is, I've changed my mind. When I started in this space about 14, 15 years ago, I was a EVP disciple. I'm not sure we need these big bloated projects that last 2 years, employee value propositions. I'm now a fan of still research-based value propositions, but because of the segmentation, I think, has become so important, this one-size-fits-all EVP with a bit of localization sprinkled on top doesn't work anymore. So for me, it's about being more nimble and responsive with my value proposition, and lending it to the marketing that you do. And then just lastly, it's not TA based, but I just want to put it in. We need to obliterate this sort of beige, tepid, boring, bland branding in recruitment marketing. That's my mantra.
No more beige. Charu, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you, Matt.
My thanks to Charu. You can subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or via your podcasting app of choice. Please also follow the show on Instagram. You can find us by searching for Recruiting Future. You can search all the past episodes at recruitingfuture.com. On that site, you can also subscribe to the mailing list to get the new monthly newsletter and the inside track about everything that's coming up on the show. Thanks very much for listening. I'll be back next time, and I hope you'll join me.
This is my show.
Hi, my name is Sarah, and I want to tell you about my podcast called Can I Offer You Some Feedback? I'm a business consultant and executive coach with over 20 years' experience in change management, leadership development, and naturally providing feedback to high performers. My podcast is for those of you who have a complicated relationship with feedback, whether giving, receiving, avoiding, or seeking. Feedback is essential for our development. In each episode, you'll hear from real people across industries with their ideas, perspectives, and best practices on feedback. I'll also be sharing business bites with you, simple explanations of organizational tools, management techniques, and leadership philosophies that will help you and your businesses thrive. You can listen to Can I Offer You Some Feedback on your favorite podcast app, or learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com.